You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Alice Daniel. This Veterans Day, a portion of Highway 198 next to Sequoia National Park is getting a new name in honor of Colonel Charles Young. He's the first African American to serve as superintendent of a national park and achieve the rank of colonel in the U.S. Army. To learn more about Charles Young and his legacy, FM89's Kathleen Schock spoke with Yosemite National Park Service Ranger Shelton Johnson and author and historian Brian Shellum. We'll also hear from Ravier Kelly, a descendant of Colonel Young.
So, Brian, I understand that Colonel Young was born into slavery, yet went on to study at West Point. Can you fill in the gaps? How did he make this remarkable transition?
Okay, so he was born to enslaved parents in Maeslick, Kentucky in 1864. His father, Gabriel, succeeded on his second attempt to escape north to Ohio, took his wife, Arminta, and son Charles, who was about 6 months old at the time, with them. And they settled around in Brown County around Ripley, Ohio. And he was a bright young man. His mother was one of those rare African Americans at the time who was educated. And so she homeschooled Charles Young, and then he went off to school. They eventually moved to Ripley, Ohio, because there were good schools there. He graduated in 1880 or 1881. He taught at the local black school for about 2 years, and then he competed for a nomination to West Point. And so he began West Point in 1885, so that's kind of in a nutshell how he got from being enslaved in Kentucky to West Point.
It's an amazing story, but that's really just the beginning. Shelton Johnson, you spoke at length about Colonel Young's legacy with the national parks as part of Ken Burns' famous documentary. Tell us a little bit about that part of Colonel Young's journey and some of the legacy that he has left with the U.S. national parks.
Well, one thing that's important to keep in mind is that when people think of national park rangers, they think of them as they exist today. They're not thinking about who preceded the National Park Service in a governing sense within Yellowstone, within Sequoia, within Yosemite National Park. So the Army actually was provided that role. And so the ranger hat that we think of that has become so famous throughout the world, well, that hat is a cavalry hat. And so because the first protectors of the national parks, starting in the late 1880s in Yellowstone National Park, and then continuing after 1890 in Yosemite and Sequoia, the first rangers were these soldiers who were protecting the parks before there was any such thing as a National Park Service. So what we've inherited from the Army within this agency that's called the National Park Service, we've inherited a look. We've inherited that hat, that ranger hat that is so familiar to people throughout the world that visit our national parks. That hat came from or stems from the United States Army, and in particular a cavalry hat, although infantry served here as well. And so when I think of Charles Young, I think that he was born in 1864, I immediately have a lens through which I see how it relates to the parks. In 1864 was the year that President Abraham Lincoln set aside Yosemite Valley with the Yosemite Grant. So I see that connection already to Charles Young in the same year that he was actually born. So much of what we think of when we think of the National Park Ranger is rooted literally in the United States Army, in that military experience. And when I'm talking to visitors and they're saying to me, so why was the Army brought in? I mean, they look at me, they have this kind of look of befuddlement to some degree, because we look at the Army today through a lens that's different than how the Army was perceived 100 years ago. If you were a graduate of West Point in the 19th century, you were a graduate of the premier school of engineering in the United States. And West Point essentially was started by Thomas Jefferson for the purpose of building a new nation. And so these weren't just soldiers. These were essentially field scientists who were brought into the national parks. And that mantle was passed on literally to the National Park Service when it was created in 1916. So when I think of Charles Young, I see a transition figure, and it gives us a blueprint and a biography to who we used to be and who we still are to a great degree today.
Ravier, as a descendant of this remarkable man, why is it so important to keep his legacy alive, to keep his memory alive? As an African American, you know, I can say that Growing up, we don't learn these histories in school often. In researching this conversation, I was blown away by the story. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, why do you feel it's so important that we continue to have these conversations?
I think it's important for, as you were saying, as an African-American person hearing these stories. I think a lot of stories of historical minority men and women are not included in the history books. So you don't grow up hearing about them. And I know that from my family keeping, letting us all learn about Carl Jung and his story, it was inspiring to me and something that I often drew upon for strength throughout different phases of my life. It's a story of determination and perseverance in the face of obstacles. So I think it's important to keep the story alive, to inspire minorities, but it's also important to keep his story alive because I think that you don't just have to be African-American or a minority to relate to his story, since it's one of perseverance. So it can be drawn upon from people from different walks of life, different ethnicities. I think it's important to keep that alive.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Valley Edition. Today, we're talking about the legacy of Charles Jung, who was the first Black U.S. National Park superintendent. He will be honored in the Sequoia Kings Canyon National Park this Veterans Day. Brian, I would love for you to put Colonel Jung's legacy into a broader historical context. How remarkable is his life story?
Yeah, so he was the third African-American to graduate from West Point and the last for nearly a half a century. Shortly after he graduated West Point, really the prejudice in America closed the doors to blacks at the military academy until Benjamin O. Davis Jr. graduated in 1936. So Jung was a trailblazer for his race in the Army, and he was the only one. He went on to be the first black military attaché serving abroad at one of our embassies in Haiti. And he went on to serve two more tours in Liberia.
The legacy is remarkable.
And he attained the rank of colonel by the time World War I began. And by that time, there were some medical issues and racial prejudice that prevented him from being the first black brigadier general.
So, Shelton, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that you are the only African-American ranger at Yosemite National Park today. And I'm curious, from where you sit, how much of an inspiration are stories like these? And how do you think these kind of stories can be leveraged to inspire more African-Americans and people of color to enjoy our national parks and to maybe follow in your footsteps?
Well, one thing that's important to keep in mind is that African Americans in general, we come out of a history of segregation rather than integration, of not being made to feel welcome in certain environments historically. So if you're growing up in an inner city urban area and you're African American and you hear about national parks, the first thing to keep in mind is that when you look at the history of national parks and tourism, the tourism traditionally was never inflected toward people of color, never specifically inflected toward African Americans because of our history of race and discrimination and so forth. So if you grow up in an African American family in an urban area such as I did in Detroit, you would not naturally think that places like Yellowstone or the Grand Canyon or Zion are environments that are specific to you and your culture. So when you hear a story about Charles Jung, the third African-American to graduate from West Point, who was superintendent of Sequoia National Park in 1903, and this, of course, is fully a decade before the creation of the National Park Service itself, well, that awareness contradicts everything that you've been led to believe about your own ethnicity and the role of your ethnicity and your culture with regard to the national park idea. And so it is a revolutionary perception. It is a revolutionary inception to have that thought that people who look like me were running a national park or working in a national park before the creation of the National Park Service itself. Because what you'll find, in a very vernacular way, you find that many African Americans have this thought that national parks aren't for us, they're not about us. And when you come out of that history of Jim Crow, where it was very difficult just to move freely, you know, that's why the Green Book was invented, literally, mm-hmm. was so that we would have this sense of safety and security. Well, if you come out of the opposite of that and don't feel safe in rural environments because of that history of Jim Crow, the KKK, and so forth, why would you think that it would be a wonderful experience to take your family to Montana or Wyoming and go to Yellowstone, or to go to rural California or the wild aspect of California, which can be found in Sequoia National Park and Yosemite National Park, because they're essentially, in a purest sense, wilderness environments. So hearing this story creates a pathway, a cultural pathway, that gives you a sense of safety, it gives you a sense of security, but more importantly, it gives you a sense of cultural rootedness. And that is a profound thing, to imagine an environment like Yosemite or Sequoia, and yet feeling it, that's my home, that's my cultural North Star. I mean, the path to freedom may have been going north, but maybe the path to freedom also leads into the West, and it leads to environments like these environments, because now you have that rootedness in them because of a history that was unknown that's now being told.
So, Ravier, I want to give you the last word. I understand that one of the biggest legacies that Young left on the park system was the management of road construction, which is literally what has enabled so many of us to participate in these beautiful treasures of our nation. Given that, I think it's so fitting that the tribute that you will be a part of on Veterans Day is naming a portion of Highway 198 in Charles Young's honor. Can you just speak from a family perspective about what that moment is going to feel like for you?
Yes, we are very honored and proud to have the road renamed after him. I think it's a, as you were saying, true testament to the work that he and the time that he dedicated to our country and the national parks. I think it also, kind of what Shelton hit on a little bit earlier about you know, bringing awareness, especially to minorities and inner cities, of that the national parks is a place for them. I think that having the road renamed really means a lot from that aspect as well, and just gives a lot more visibility to not only the fact that he was the first African-American colonel, but also his involvement with the national parks. So I see it as a way of keeping his story alive and bringing awareness to it.
Well, we appreciate you all being with us today so we can talk a bit about his story and share it with a larger audience. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.